Blog Talk Radio.
Indianapolis 88-86. The game went into overtime, and we're here on the assembly call to talk about it. I'm your host, Jared Morris. I'll be joined by Andy Bottoms. Ryan will not be able to join us today. I assume our buddy Zach will call in at some point. The call in number is 646-716-6360. If you want to call in and have your thoughts heard, we'll probably start taking calls here in about 20 minutes. But before that, there is a lot to break down, as I think a tweet by Zach Osterman really just summed it up. Final score was 88-86. Great game, but one that raises real questions for Indiana. And I agree with that. Indiana has obviously played very well overall through their first nine games, jumping out to that 9-0 start. And today was a big test, obviously, against a team in Butler that was not in the top 25. They certainly will be after this victory and deserve to be, as Clark Kellogg said numerous times on the broadcast. But this was a really big game for Indiana on a neutral floor against a smart team, against a physical team. You know, a team that obviously, you know, has already beaten teams like North Carolina and Marquette. So they've proven themselves. And frankly, Indiana failed to live up to the test. And this was a game that no matter if Indiana or Butler won this game, Butler deserved to win it. And, you know, to that end, they did end up winning it and certainly earned it playing the entire overtime without, you know, Roosevelt Jones and Andrew Smith, who had been two of their most important players, for a lot of the game. Those guys were out for overtime, and they still found a way to beat Indiana by two. They earned this victory, and I think Zach's right. This does raise some questions, and we're going to break down a lot of those questions today. And I think, you know, let's start out. I want to bring Andy in right now. Andy, we can jump right to your bottoms line. And I have a feeling, I mean, you and I, when we were kind of chatting during the game, we were talking a lot about Cody. And Cody's numbers, you know, he ends up with 18 points. You know, he ended up, there in overtime, was able to score a couple times, was able to get to the free throw line, ends up with 18 points, but just 5 rebounds. He was 10 of 14 from the line, 4 of 9 from field goal range. And, you know, you and I were having a conversation in the second half. Is this the worst game that Cody has played? You know, just, you know, if for anybody who maybe didn't watch the game, that was kind of the perspective we were having watching it. I think his numbers really aren't indicative of the kind of game it was, because obviously when he was able to pick up some of those points there in the second half, you know, Butler's basically playing with their backup front court guys. But let's start there, because I think Cody's performance, and to a certain extent, you know, Christian Watford, who we'll get to as well, you know, Indiana's two supposed NBA-ready guys really did not come to play today. And I think, to me, as I think back about this game, that's the big storyline, and that's where Butler really was able to win this game.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought both those guys really kind of sleepwalked through parts of the game. I'm not sure what – I don't know what term I would apply to it. I mean, they ended up scoring, both doing most of their damage from the free throw line. And as you said, you know, Cody had 6 points in overtime playing against, or well, I think maybe 6, maybe 8, playing against, you know, guys who are 6'5 or less. So, I mean, you'd expect that from him. I just thought really got out-muscled by Andrew Smith, and that was one of the things that we would harp on a lot last year, and what he was able to do when guys were physical with him, and really hadn't been challenged a great deal so far in the early going, because even though Georgetown had some size, they really didn't have a banger to really, go in the post to. I think the closest you came to seeing that was against Georgia when, he was slowed a little bit by the flu but didn't play well. They had a number of big guys who really kind of muscled him around a little bit, and I think you saw the same thing in this game. And he can't play, I don't see the minutes in front of me, but whatever number of minutes it was, and get five rebounds. That particularly against a team that doesn't hardly play anybody over 6'7", you just have to want the ball more than that. And he let himself pretty easily get rooted out at times. I thought it impacted him offensively. He ended up drawing a lot of fouls, but, rarely got good position. Was one instance in particular where he did get fouled, but instead of going right into Smith's chest, he tried to fall away and put a shot in. And I think, that's an area where, he has to get better. That doesn't mean he might still not be the player of the year and that he isn't great, but it was really the first test of what he could do, against a veteran big guy who knows the tricks of the trade and knows the ropes and really let himself get pushed around.
Yeah, no, I tweeted out at one point that, Andrew Smith was basically using old man strength on Cody Zeller today. And that's, and it wasn't to this extent, but I kept it. You remember last year when Blake Griffin had those dunks on Pau Gasol where he basically just overpowered him out of the way and there was nothing Gasol could do? It wasn't to that extent, but that's what I kept thinking of. Because, there were rebounds there, there were opportunities there down low, and it just looked like Cody just kept getting, rooted out, like you said, and didn't, a combination of maybe not quite, I don't know if not wanting it enough is the best phrase, but just not quite being strong enough or assertive enough to take it. And we've talked a lot on this show about how we tend to take Cody's really good performances for granted. We don't talk about him a lot. But to me, this is a game on a neutral floor against a team like Butler, where, if you're the player of the year, as, Cody was by every publication before the game, this is where you step up and say, I'm winning this game. And I didn't see that. Cody had, he showed off some of his skills. He had the nice, kind of turnaround jump shot. And he did, some of the things we've come to see. But, we weren't getting the transition buckets very much today. And you're right. I mean, it's, for him to play that many minutes and only collect five rebounds, it was a very underwhelming performance, on a national television game. And, you said in your preview for Butler to win this game, Andrew Smith would have to play Cody to a draw. I mean, frankly, Smith finished with 12 points, 9 boards. I thought Andrew Smith outplayed Cody. Even though their numbers, Cody ended up with 18 points, I thought he outplayed him. And that's just something that for Indiana to be the number one team, for Cody to live up the potential that people think he has, days like today can't happen.
Yeah, and I think, I would absolutely agree that he outplayed him. He outplayed him in less time on the floor. I mean, when you think about time he missed with foul trouble, he played a long time with four fouls in the second half, did a really nice job of not putting himself in situations to foul out. And so he ended up playing far less minutes, scored fewer points, almost doubled him up in rebounds, and I thought really, was the better guy out there. I think the other thing that, I didn't really touch on with Cody was I thought he had some real lapses defensively. One, he runs out at Smith, who, yeah, he hit a three earlier in the game, but he's not a three-point shooter. Let him take that shot. He runs out at him out of control, drives right by him, goes to the basket, gets a layup. There was another play on the side of the floor. I think it was Kellen Dunham, had Yogi out there, and Smith's out setting the screen, and Yogi's trying to go over it, and there's no help out there whatsoever, and Dunham hits a three at a critical juncture. So I just thought really, in all facets of the game, just didn't seem to be himself. I don't know what it was, and I'm sure we'll get into Watford a little bit, but that's another one. I think, just in general, we'd seen earlier this year when guys didn't have, their best stuff or their best game, you saw other guys step up, and I don't think we saw a whole lot of that today. I mean, some of the other, I'm sure we'll get to the other numbers. I thought he played fairly well off the bench, but didn't really get a lot of bench production outside of that. And Green really tightened up the rotation a lot in the second half with the game getting close. So, I don't know what you want to hit on next, but there's probably no shortage of things to get to.
Well, I'll tell you what I want to hit on next, and it's the one number that jumps out at me looking at the box score. Now, I do want to say, in terms of positives, I did think that once again, and this becomes more clear to me, this is how I ended the show last time, it's become more clear to me every game, Shiladipo, Victor Oladipo, Will Sheehy, those two guys are the heartbeat of this team. And they bring it every day. Like, we never come on here and say, wow, I really look like, you know, Will and Victor sleepwalked through that game. You know, we say things like that about Cody today, even, you know, especially about Christian Watford, who, yes, we'll get to, but I want to delay that because I'm already, you know, kind of bummed out enough anyway. But, you know, I thought Victor today, I thought he was outstanding. I mean, he did. Look, he had six turnovers. One of them was careless late, and it was a bad turnover. But he also had that, you know, a huge steal and bucket when we needed it. He was an efficient 7-10 from the field, 18 points. He had three boards, four assists, four steals, two blocks. He really did a good job early on Rodney Clark. I thought Victor played a really good game. I thought Will did a good job. So I think those two guys, again, they are the rocks that this team can count on. You know, and they bring the energy, they bring the focus every single game. That was a positive. Now, I'm looking at the box score, and, you know, look, being out-rebounded by six jumps out at you. You know, the other number that jumps out at you is Indiana made 27 free throws. They shot 38. I mean, they only made 71%. Butler only shot 16. So you lose a game to Butler where you make 11 more free throws than they shoot, which is mind-boggling to me. But still, the number that jumps out to me off of the box score is that Indiana in this game was led in field goal attempts by Yogi Ferrell with 13. He had 13. Hollis had 11. Victor had 10. Cody had 9. You know, in a game like this where it became much more of a half-court game, Indiana was not able to run, not able to get the transition buckets that they've been used to. Yogi Ferrell should not, now, look, obviously he made the huge three at the end of regulation. That was tremendous, and I thought Kellogg made a great point that, you know, he's not surprised he makes a shot because the kid's a winner. It's in his DNA, and that's all true. That's all true about Yogi. But over the course of 45 minutes, he should not be taking 13 field goal attempts, two more than anybody else, in a game that's a half-court game. So I want to get your thoughts on that, Andy, because I thought, you know, Yogi made some spectacular plays. You know, his box score line, 12 points, 8 boards, but then also 7 turnovers. I thought it was a very uneven performance for him, which was really kind of a microcosm of the entire offense, which just – seemed off to me all day, and a big credit goes to Butler's defense for that, obviously.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, and I don't know that, I mean, I don't, the scenario that I'm going to lay out probably won't happen, but the only case where I think he leads him in field goal attempts is if most of them are layups, or runners in the lane, or things like that. Very few of them were of that variety. I mean, I can think of one after a made basket he got down the floor, a couple others, but generally speaking, he's taken mid-range jump shots, and he took, you know, four threes, and hit a couple, and I think, you know, Butler was giving him shots early, as other teams have done this year. And almost to some extent for IU, one of the worst things that happened was he made a couple, because then he seemed to feel, you know, obviously you like guys to play with confidence, but he just seemed more willing to settle for that later on down the line in the game. And, yeah, I mean, I was glad to see he made the shot, obviously, you know, wanting IU to win, but also just because, you know, you could tell how bad he felt after he, you know, fumble that pass out of bounds off his leg. So, you know, kind of was nice to see him redeem himself a little bit there. But, yeah, I definitely agree. There's not going to be too many games when he's going to lead them in field goal attempts and things are going to be going well, because the reality is that Butler wanted him to shoot. If you look at that, most of the time, guys he's on the floor with, he's the guy they want to make beat them. They're not going to let Holes get open looks. They did a really good job against him today. You know, you got Zeller and Watford, and, you know, if Victor or Sheehy's out there, that's the guy people want to take shots, and he obliged today. And, you know, I think the turnovers is obviously the, you know, probably the more concerning part from my perspective. I mean, he had half of the turnovers for the team, and I know Victor had six. You kind of mentioned that a minute ago, but 13 turnovers on a couple guys is pretty rough when everybody else has none. But, yeah, definitely an uneven performance from him, because I like some of the things I saw, but he definitely – you can tell excels far more in an open court game where he just, you know, was missing some guys and made a few bad decisions today.
Well, our buddy Nick is on the line. Zach's on the line. So we're going to get to you guys here in just a second. If anybody else wants to call in and give your take, it's 646-716-6360. We do have kind of a limited time since this was an overtime game. We've got about 36 minutes left of live airtime. So we'll ask you to keep your points a little bit short. Before we get to you guys, you know, one more thing that I want to talk about. Before we move on, I want to talk a little bit more about Jordan Hulls, Andy, because, you know, Luke Wynn came out on SI.com, the excellent Luke Wynn, who, you know, all college basketball fans should read, because I think he provides insights and especially, you know, advanced statistical insights that are just that are so valuable, you know, as you're kind of following the college basketball season. And he called Jordan Hulls the most efficient offensive role player in the country. And and the reason for that was basically how Jordan Hulls has reduced a lot of the mid-range two-point attempts this year, which is a relatively inefficient shot for most players, and, you know, has been taking more threes, making more threes, and basically just, you know, making more efficient use of his usage, which is still relatively high. I thought today Butler really did a nice job of forcing Jordan Hulls into taking long two-point attempts. You know, it was 4 of 11. He was 0 for 2 from downtown, didn't even make a 3 today. And a lot of those misses were, you know, from 13 to 18 feet, which is especially ironic considering, you know, that article lauding Hulls for not taking those shots. And today he did. Is that, you know, as you look at that, and I'm sure you, you know, read that article and saw that analysis, was that something that Butler's defense forced him into, or were these just kind of poor decisions by Jordan in the half-court offense?
I mean, I think I'd give Butler's defense a lot of credit for that. I mean, I think they did force him into those shots. He got one pretty wide-open three in the first half that he missed, and he shot the one at the last play of overtime. Those are the only three-pointers he shot the entire game, and they took that away, and I think that that's something that, you know, as I've looked and previewed different games, that was something I said you needed to do against Rodney Clark, is to make him put the ball on the floor. It's not that he can't do that, and it's by the same token, it isn't that Hulls can't score that way. But again, it's just that, you know, he's taking kind of tough leaners, and, you know, there was another one late in overtime that was, you know, he kind of dipped under Clark, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a high-quality shot, one he can make, certainly, but not, you know, not high-quality. And the other thing I thought that Butler did really well with Hulls was really took advantage of him defensively. Obviously, yeah, you're running a play at the end of the game for a guy who came to your program as a walk-on, I think solely based on the fact that Hulls was on him. You know, Rodney Clark took advantage of him for the few possessions that he guarded him. And at other junctures during the game, he was trying to guard, you know, Roosevelt Jones or Kyle Marshall because, you know, they had to put Oladipo on Clark. And, you know, Yogi's got to take another smaller guy. And so, you know, Hulls was really, you know, outmatched defensively today, partly because he was playing guys a lot bigger than he was for portions of the game. And I thought that Butler did a really good job of, you know, taking advantage of him a little bit on that end of the floor, and that kind of, whether that toyed with his confidence or not, I don't know. I'd like to think it probably didn't, but certainly didn't help, I would say. So I thought that was, they just did a really good job of putting pressure on him on both ends of the floor in today's game, and I think, you know, you can only expect other teams to do the same so long as they have the, you know, kind of personnel and the coaching to do it.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the phone lines real quick. We're going to bring Nick on, then Zach, we'll go to you. 646-716-6360. If anybody else listening wants to call in and talk about this game, let's bring you on. Let's talk about what you want to talk about. All right, Nick, let's go to you first, man. What were your thoughts on IU's first loss of the season today?
Sorry for the loss of my voice. I think I lost it all on the Yogi 3 at the end. I think that two things really, or I guess three things really stood out for me. I know, Jared, you talked about us taking more free throws than Butler made, but we still missed a lot, it felt like. I was at a bar across the street from Bankers Life, so I don't know any of the statistics or anything, but it felt like we missed a lot of free throws. Rebounding, it felt like we gave Butler a lot of second chance opportunities. And then on defense, I guess to piggyback what you were saying off of Hulls is, you know, I know he's a senior and everything, but I think he's one of those guys where maybe you sub Remy in and have Yogi and Remy playing the 1-2 on those. When it gets to that half-court possession, you know, last 2 minutes, you know, Hulls goes out on D and on O. And then I guess following that up with defense is, you know, Butler took the air out of the ball in kind of what felt like a Wisconsin-type game. And because we weren't able to get the transitions and the defense to kind of increase our, you know, I think we use defense a lot to get to the transition, to get to offense. And we just didn't do that. And, you know, I think this is a preview for the frustrations we're going to feel against a team like Wisconsin, where they keep Cody from getting the ball and then our guards take bad shots. I mean, it was the same thing we were saying last year when we lost some games. It was, man, we didn't get the ball to Cody enough. You know, why wasn't Cody touching the ball every time the last 2 minutes, you know, and they kept the ball out of Cody's hands and forced those guards to take those kind of suspect mid-range twos, and that hurt us.
Yeah, no, Nick, you bring up some really good points. From a statistical perspective, from, you know, but free throws, Indiana missed 11 free throws. So they were 27 of 38 today. Obviously, you knocked down a couple more of those. you know, which we expect this Indiana team to be a, you know, 75% or better free throw shooting team. You know, it's a different result. From a rebounding perspective, Indiana actually evened it out a little bit late. But that, of course, was with Andrew Smith and Roosevelt Jones out, who were their two leading rebounders today. But, yeah, Butler, for the most part, owned the glass. Then they ended up out-rebounding Indiana 37-31. And let's talk about the D. Andy, I want to bring you back real quick before we go to Zach and talk about the defense late in the game. Because Tom Crean is very strategic, you know, and especially at the end of regulation. Shoot, you know, when Indiana got desperate, Cody Zeller and Christian Watford, you know, supposedly Indiana's two NBA-ready guys, are both off the floor. You know, and Watford's been lauded for his defense. And obviously Cody is, you know, I mean, he's a seven-footer, so he's a supposed rim protector. And I know that we were trying to match the personnel of Butler, but I thought it was curious that both those guys were off the floor. Now, in a couple instances, it worked. But I thought, especially at the end of overtime, you know, you've got Hulls on the floor, and you've got Cody out of there. And, you know, look, I kind of understood the strategy, but I'm not sure I totally understood it. What did you think of that kind of late-game chess match? Because I think, I mean, obviously the end result was Butler winning, but I think even the individual moves, as I was watching the game, it looked to me like Brad Stevens was always kind of one step ahead.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was interesting. I mean, it makes you wonder to a certain extent. You know, we've seen IU press a couple times this year, and it's been really effective. I thought it was really effective, and this game really seemed to heighten the intensity level that had not really been there for a while. And it almost makes you wonder why they don't do that more and take advantage of some of that depth. But I do agree that in that scenario where you're substituting liberally, you're committing fouls on purpose, so you're going to have stoppages in play. You know, why do you have a guy who's really been getting taken advantage of defensively? And there was, you know, one of the plays, Holes let somebody get around him, and he just made, you know, kind of an unnecessary foul at that point down there. And it just, yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree that it seems like if you're going to go all out and put your best, you know, defenders on the floor, why not have Cody there to at least protect the rim or something if somebody goes in there instead of playing the five smaller guys? I mean, maybe a small point, I guess, but I think one that if you're going to substitute and really try to play matchups or do things that way, I'm not sure why you want the guy who's really not played well defensively on the floor at that point.
All right, let's bring Zach in. I know Zach's going to have some hot sports opinions on this IU game. Zach, what'd you think of the Hoosiers today?
Well, as I've said many times on Twitter, you know, well-deserved win for Butler. They strategized great against IU, as you guys have said many times. Like everybody else, kind of shaking my head, questioning some of the coaching decisions late, obviously, with who was on the floor, who was not on the floor. Pretty much every stat that you look at is puzzling, whether it's you know, Yogi Ferrell, I'm not sure, did he finish with the most rebounds on the Hoosiers? I know he had with a couple minutes
left. Yes, he did. He had eight. No one else had more than five.
Right, so Yogi Ferrell with the most rebounds on the Hoosiers, the most shot attempts. Cody and Watford not playing in crucial minutes, getting out-rebounded and, you know, in a matchup where I really thought the Hoosiers would dominate down low and, you know, it would finally be a matchup, you know, in the national spotlight where IU would have a huge upper hand and really be able to showcase Cody and Christian down low. You know, pretty much everything went the opposite way that I thought it would play out. You know, and that being, I see a lot of people on Twitter saying how, you know, it could be a positive going forward for Indiana. And that's definitely the case, as frustrating as it is right now. And trust me, I'm esteemed as anybody on that loss. You know, the number one ranking that Indiana had for, you know, a couple months now, since they got it in the preseason, you know, that's had an immeasurable effect on the Hoosiers and on the program going forward and everything, recruiting and whatnot. And, you know, even though we're going to lose that at least temporarily right now, you know, we still probably have the deepest team in America. We still, you know, have one of the best few teams in the country all around, without a doubt. And, you know, although it might be a little bit tough to swallow for, you know, as Hoosier faithful, you know, right now, you know, in the long run, we do have to remember we're still in a good position going forward. We still, you know, should be able to get things rolling against some easy opponents before Big Ten play tips off. And then, you know, we really even have a pretty easy start to Big Ten play. So we do have a while where, you know, players can, you know, kind of start to get going on the right foot again. You know, Perea and Jerkin can feel their way into the offense and defense. And, you know, although this one is kind of tough to bounce back from, you know, maybe tonight or this weekend for Hoosier fans, and I'm sure for, you know, Oladipo and Holt, who just look stunned after the loss there in Indy. You know, it'll definitely be all right going forward. We're still in a good position, and things overall should still be looking up for IU fans in general. Thanks.
Yeah, no, Zach, I agree with you, and good points. And I think it is important to maintain perspective. You know, and still Indiana's 9-1, and you know, look, I think it would be disrespectful to what Butler has done with their program and how good of a coach Brad Stevens is and how good players they have, you know, to sit here and act like this is the worst thing. Look, you're playing a team on a neutral floor that, you know, went to two straight, you know, championship games, and obviously players have changed, but the style is still the same, the coach is still the same. You know, to me, I wasn't expecting anything more than a hard-fought, grinded-out win. Here's what I didn't like about today, and here's what really concerns me about today. There is no shame in losing to Butler. Look, if we went out there, you know, you play hard, you play well, you know, and you lose to Butler, fine. Butler's a good team, you know, and maybe on a national perspective, people look at it as, oh, unranked Butler beat Indiana. But we're Hoosiers, and you know, Butler is a team from Indiana that plays Indiana-style basketball. We know there would be no shame in losing that game. But getting punked by Butler, which is what I thought Indiana did today, outside of, you know, Victor and Will, who I thought played with some toughness, I thought a lot of the other guys, Cody, Christian, you know, two of the most important guys, I thought they just got muscled around. And they got out physical, they got out tough, they got out wanted to by the Butler players. And that's what concerns me, that mentality. Because, look, let's be honest, if Christian Watford – and, Andy, I want to bring you in now. We're going to talk about Christian. I know you said in the chat that we had during the game he's the most frustrating player you've ever watched. We have to talk about him. If he had gone pro, I don't think Indiana is the number one team in the country preseason. You know, as deep as Indiana supposedly is, you know, Christian coming back and what that meant with him as a senior, you know, expected to be really focused, ready to make his push for the NBA and kind of take his skill set to the next level. You know, I think people expected in a game like this, you know, neutral floor, this guy's got big game experience, makes big shots. These are the games where having a guy like Christian Watford is going to be huge. And he comes out today and, frankly, lays an egg. I mean, he has 9 points and 3 rebounds, you know, and he only makes 1 field goal, only attempts 5. I mean, the only person who played decent minutes, who attempted fewer field goals than Christian today, was Hunter, who attempted 1. And, you know, so, you know, Indiana's going to lose its number one ranking. Fine. They deserve to lose the number one ranking because they lost today. They wouldn't have had it in the first place if Christian hadn't come back. And frankly, we're not seeing the same Christian Watford that we saw last year. We've seen glimpses of it, but this one that we saw today is more what we're seeing. And it's hurting his NBA stock, and it's hurting Indiana's team because he just doesn't – I can't put my finger on it, but he's just not locked in. You know, you just – There were so many times last year where you really thought, wow, he's really, you know, kind of and obviously he was a little bit up and down, but he still, you know, was better in games like this. You know, he usually stepped up in big games, and I thought today was a big spot for him to step up and say, hey, I'm Christian Watford. I've been here before. The offense is struggling. This is a half-court game. I've got a height advantage. Let me create scoring opportunities, and he didn't do it. So I know you're frustrated, so I'm just going to give you the floor. But, you know, as I walk away from this game, I'm frustrated by Cody's play. But, shoot, at least Cody finished with 18 points and 5 boards, you know. I mean, Christian finishes with 9 points, 3 rebounds, and barely made an impact on the game as a senior who's supposedly coming back to lift his NBA stock. So I'll leave the floor to you, Andy, to discuss Christian, because I'm frustrated because he's better than this. That's why I'm frustrated, because we know how good he can be.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's the thing. I mean, you look at how he played at the end of the season last year. You look at how he showed flashes at other points, and I honestly don't know what you never know what you're going to get out of him when a game starts and the ball's in the air. I mean, he played really well in the last game, and I thought, you know, again, not a great opponent, but he's a guy who, from a mental standpoint, we all kind of have come to realize is a little bit fragile or temperamental or whatever you want to say. And so it felt like, you know, that's the kind of game that could get him going. And that just did not translate well at all. I thought he, in the same way, really got out-muscled by Roosevelt Jones. a lot of times early in the game in terms of giving up some of those second chance points and things like that, and got himself in a little bit of foul trouble. And then in the second half, for a stretch, and we've talked about this before as well, you just go through these times where he's just clearly hunting shots. There are times when he gets the ball at the three-point line, and you know that one way or another he's taking a shot, whether it's that three-pointer, whether it's trying to get into the lane. And so for a couple-minute stretch, he shot the ball almost every time he touched it. And one of those was a quick, poor shot that leads to, you know, a little bit of a break situation going the other way and a three-pointer for Butler. And he just couldn't seem to do anything within the confines of the offense, and for a while almost made up his mind that he was going to try to make something happen, whether it was there or not. And, you know, I think those are the kinds of things that are frustrating. The kinds of things that you can control are blocking somebody out, grabbing rebounds, doing those kinds of things, doing the little things, and I don't think he did those. It's one thing not to score, and, you know, I think we've said that before. If he goes out and grabs 8 rebounds, you know, it's hard-pressed to think IU's going to lose games where he does that, even if he scores 4 points. But you can't do neither and then, you know, think that you're going to be able to rebound from that. So I thought it was just another uneven performance from him, and I think that, you know, while it's easy to say, well, the team's different and maybe he can't figure out what his role is, I don't know that it's that different than what it was last year. I mean, they didn't lose anybody who's stealing minutes from him. The fact that Yogi's there doesn't do anything to him. Clearly, Kareem is committed to playing Sheehy as the sixth man, regardless of how well he plays, which I'm fine with, by the way. But if you're not benching Watford these after some of these other games and how well Sheehy's played, you're probably not going to do it. So I don't feel like it's a situation where he sees something slipping away that, you know, his role on the team is diminishing based on personnel changes, because I don't think that's the case at all. But again, so now you have another game where he doesn't play very well, and you go into the next game wondering, I have no idea what this guy's going to do. If he could come out and score 20 points. You know, I think he had 21 points in 20 minutes against, you know, admittedly, Central Connecticut State. Not good at all defensively, but you at least feel like he comes into the game with a little confidence, and that just didn't really translate. Other than getting to the line, there wasn't much to, wasn't much to love about his performance today. And I think that's a case where, Yogi, to a certain extent, forgivable or not forgivable, that's probably not the right word either way. But, you know, he's a freshman, can get caught up in the moment, going back to Indianapolis, you know, playing a game in a place where he's had a lot of success. Like, I can see how he can get caught up in the moment and take some shots maybe he shouldn't. I don't see how you can have that from a senior who's been through everything that these guys have that have been around the program that long.
No, Yogi was uneven, but Yogi was engaged in the game. You know, like, I can forgive Yogi's mistakes. I mean, he was open, you know, and he wanted to get into the game, and he's taken some of those shots, and it's a different game for Indiana. I mean, really, other than the Georgetown game, I mean, when have they really been forced into a half-court basketball game? And they were today, and they're still – they don't seem comfortable in that kind of a basketball game, and I think they're still kind of feeling out their roles when it is a half-court game like that. And I can forget, you know, Yogi had the really bad turnover late where the ball just bounces off his knee, you know, but otherwise at least he's trying to make plays. You know, he's out there, he's doing things, and he's getting rebounds, and he's still doing other things. I mean, Christian just, I mean, he's sleepwalking through these games, and it's just, you know, it's frustrating because we've seen him. When he gets that look in his eye and he goes out and he grabs 15 rebounds against Michigan State, which we've seen. And when he, you know, there's sometimes I don't mind Christian hunting shots because he's a great scorer. He can be a great scorer. You know, what I don't like is when he's not engaged in the game and then he decides, I'm going to go hunt shots for a couple possessions, because he's not going to make those. You know, there's a difference. We've seen him when he's had his 20, 25-point games in big games where he's out there hunting shots. Fine, you know, because you're putting the team on your back, just like he did at the end of the first half against VCU or in the tournament. I think it was VCU when he made those 2 threes. I mean, he's hunting those shots. You know, it's frustrating because, I know he came back to improve his NBA stock and to, you know, to obviously see this team through, which everybody had high hopes for. You know, and right now he's hurting both. Christian's hurting both because he's hurting his NBA stock because he's allowing himself to be exposed against opponents that he should be playing better against. And he's hurting Indiana because, you know, he's taking minutes away from guys who would at least play with more energy. Now, here's what I'm going to be interested to see, Andy, and let's get your thoughts on this. We talked about, you know, okay, so Kareem really hasn't been able to sit Christian much. I mean, he's benched him, you know, for that one game, and he's benched him at halftime before. But we haven't had much front court depth. We've got Hunter back. We've got Jerkin back. Derek Elson was apparently moving fluidly in pregame warm-up, so he should be back. If this kind of crap continues, where Christian just comes to the game and doesn't seem interested, do you think that could change? I mean, do you think a guy like Hunter could start getting more minutes at the four? And do you think a guy like Elson could start getting those minutes? And maybe having these guys back in there can be that thing that pushes Christian to say, okay, now I really could start sitting on the pine for real if I don't get going.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I you know, like I said after the game last week, I didn't expect either Perea or Jerkin to play a lot today. Obviously, the game dictated that to a certain extent. But even prior to that, just knowing the kind of team that Butler is and kind of what you would expect from a game against them, I didn't expect them to play a whole lot. And I thought, you know, Perea, I definitely felt like he got taken advantage of a little bit on defense. You know, Butler was running a lot of pick and roll and that kind of stuff on the side of the floor with his man. And Rodney Clark, when he was in, and there were a couple of communication things where, you know, just a guy not getting a lot of game reps to go through some of that. I thought, you know, that was there. But he at least was, you know, aggressive on the boards and got that put back and did some things there. So I think, you know, these guys are all going to get, well, certainly I would expect Perea to get a lot of playing time, probably Jerkin as well in these next three games because they're not against great teams. If Elston comes back, you might see the same thing. And I think at that point, those guys get a little experience and play well, you could absolutely start to see more of that. It's hard. You'd be hard-pressed to defend not doing it at this point. So, I think, you know, maybe this is a wake-up call. I don't know, but I feel like to a certain extent we said that with him on other occasions, and it hasn't really been the case. So, you know, we'll see. You want him to respond. You want a guy to go out successful for somebody who came in when things were at rock bottom. So everybody's pulling for him, obviously, and I think, you know, whether he's pressing in order to, you know, impress scouts or whatever the case may be, I really don't know. But I think you're dead on when you're saying he's not helping either one.
All right, let's talk about the elephant in the room now, which we talked about this last year when Indiana played Butler. Because remember, coming into the Indiana-Butler game last year, there were still kind of questions about Tom Crean as the leader of the program. Obviously, he was recruiting well, but Indiana, you know, was still so uneven on the floor and hadn't had the signature wins. And when they beat Butler last year, that was before the Kentucky game, if I have my sequences right. So, I mean, he didn't kind of have that, you know, we hadn't won those big games yet. And I thought that beating Butler like we did at home, I think it was a 16-point victory, really winning a tough physical game, was a big step for Tom Crean, because so much of the fan base, whether, you know, kind of whispering it or saying it out loud, was in favor of, at some point, Brad Stevens becoming the IU coach. I think, obviously, a lot has changed in a year, and all the improvements that Indiana made last year, and how good a job Tom Crean has done in everything off the floor, just in terms of embracing the tradition and the recruiting, and just he's been so wonderful in so many ways. Now combining that with the team, getting back to number one, playing well on the floor, there are no questions about who is the right guy to lead this program overall. I don't think. There shouldn't be. But you have a game like today, and there are going to be at least, you know, whispers of people who, you know, might discuss the possibility of, hey, you know, is Brad Stevens, you know, a better guy to be a head coach? And here's what I say to that. Look, in an X's and O's one-game situation, who would anybody rather have? I mean, I think Brad Stevens is a better coach in that situation than Tom Crean, so it doesn't necessarily surprise me that in a game like today, when you look at decisions and the chess match portion of it, that Brad Stevens won out. I'm not shocked by that. It doesn't shake my faith at all that we have the right guy leading this program for the future. And I've actually been really impressed with Tom Crean's in-game ability over the past year, much more so than I was over the previous 3 years. And it's no coincidence that happened when the talent got better and that he got more experience with the guys and he's got, you know, 3- and 4-year players in the program. But I want to get your take on it, Andy, because I know, you know, you kind of study college basketball at large. You know a lot about these two teams, and you know after a game like this, there are going to be people talking about it. So let's look at kind of Crean versus Stevens. And are you surprised at all by the fact that Stevens got the better of Crean in a one-game situation? And does that at all change your impression of the fact that Crean is the right guy to be leading this program?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same place that you are. I think that I'm not shocked by that at all. I mean, obviously, you don't get to two national championship games, you know, without beating teams that probably on paper are more talented than you and proving that you're a good, you know, X's and O's guys. And more than that, just really can find whatever the one or two things are that you have an advantage at and really exploit those. And today that was, you know, holes on defense and really physicality on the glass. And I think those are the two things they, you know, really seem to focus on and, you know, some of the differences in the game. And I think that, you know, he's a guy who really, you know, has you know, made a name for himself by being able to find those things, game plan around them, take advantage of them, and be able to adjust on the fly, which I thought he did really well today with, you know, all the foul trouble and everything else that was going on, just kind of found ways to, you know, found ways to make it work and really control the tempo. So I wasn't shocked by that. At the same time, I'm not, you know, shaken in the fact that, you know, Kareem is the right guy at this point. But, you know, I definitely, you've got to start to see, you know, this now is the blueprint. Other teams are going to try to do this. Now, maybe every other team can't do this, and that's, you know, it's not like anybody hasn't thought of, hey, maybe we want to keep IU from getting out in transition before. And so, obviously, you got to have the right coaching and personnel to be able to pull off what you're trying to do. But this certainly won't be the last we see of that. And I didn't think today, at least, it was a great job of adjusting to how the game was being played. I thought there were a lot of times where the spacing was awful. The one time that you had three guys, you know, in the same spot on the floor, you had Cody tripping over holes one time in the post late in the game, and then it just kind of broke down and turned into a lot of one-on-one basketball, which, you know, sometimes it will work because the talent's there, but more often than not, you're not going to end up with the shot that you want. So I didn't think the adjustments in terms of how IU attacked Butler offensively were outstanding. I thought defensively the team really played pretty well. They really seemed to kind of scramble a little bit late in the game and panic, it almost seemed like. So not a ton of issue there. But, yeah, I mean, it's a fair question to have. And, you know, I don't think anything's happened with it, so I don't know how much merit it has to discuss. But I'm not off the Kareem bandwagon at this point, but definitely, you know, want to see how the team bounces back and adjusts to what surely will be, you know, a theme in terms of the way teams are going to start trying to play them.
Well, it only has merit because it was a conversation that was rampant before last year, and it was quieter when Indiana beat Butler, beat Kentucky, and had the season that they did. But, look, I live in Dallas. I don't live in Indiana. But, you know, you can see on Twitter and you can anticipate, you know, especially with the knowledge that Brad Stevens was an Indiana fan, has always coveted the job, I feel like every single IU-Butler game is going to be a referendum on Kareem and whether or not he's better than Stevens. You know, and the reason, and Ryan texted me this during the game, you know, that, oh, here, you know, cue all the people saying Stevens should get the job over Kareem, blah, blah, blah. I think it is warranted because I think there are people out there who think it. And I want to be clear, I don't. You know, I don't think there's any person better to be leading this program because being a college basketball coach at a program like Indiana is about more than just in-game X's and O's. Look, in-game X's and O's, Brad Stevens is better than Tom Kareem. You know, and even out-of-game, game planning, all that stuff, we know that. There's more to building a high-profile basketball program than just that. You know, so to me it doesn't change my mind, but I do think every year these teams play, you know, it's going to be one of those things where if Indiana wins, Kareem can kind of exhale. And if Indiana loses, like they did today, especially in a high-profile loss when you're the number one team, it's going to be discussed. Now, you know, I don't think it's a real serious discussion because Indiana comes into it number one and everybody knows about the recruiting class coming in, you know, next year and the years after that and everything. But it's one of those things you don't want to pile another loss to Butler or anything like that onto it. But anyway, I want to get your thoughts on that. But we've got about 7 minutes left here on the show while it's live. Here's what I want to kind of close with is, you know, I saw some tweets about how this is a positive for both teams, which I agreed with when I first looked at it. And then, you know, Zach tried to kind of put a positive spin on it, and I agreed with it. And I think for the most part, people who have listened to the show for the last year and a month and a half know that I try to always kind of put the positive spin on it. Even losses, I'm not sure I walk out of this feeling a lot of positives. And it's not because we lost to Butler. Again, I respect Butler. You know, if you go out there and lose to Butler, but you play hard and you play tough, fine. You lose to Butler. A lot of good teams have done that. But I'm a little concerned about the fact that guys we're counting on so much, like Cody and Christian, did not come out and play tough. In a big game, on a big stage, on a neutral floor, I didn't think we showed a lot of toughness. I thought Verdell Jones had a great tweet during the game that, you know, Coach Green's going to have him doing football rebounding drills tomorrow, you know. And I'm sure he speaks from experience knowing a game like this where you get out-rebounded, out-tough like that. So, look, I know, you know, I guess you can look at it from the perspective that, hey, Indiana's not going to get too full of themselves now because they've lost and Green will have the team's attention for these last three exhibition games, blah, 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 all the cliches. But I got to be honest, as someone who has always, through kind of the dark times of Crane's first 3 years and the transition of last year, I've always kind of been Mr. Positive and kind of trumpeting the positives. I don't walk away from this game feeling very positive because I'm really surprised that Butler basically shoved it in our faces and we didn't, you know, I think we forced overtime and we kept it close because we have better players. But they played better and they played tougher. And there are other teams that have players as good as we have. And we're not going to beat those teams unless we play tougher and play more together. And I kind of thought we were past performances like this, which is why, to me, I struggle finding positives because I really feel like this game was a step back. So, Andy, let me throw that over to you and get your thoughts on that. I don't know if you agree with that or if you, you know, have a positive spin on this. I know I don't usually need talking off the ledge and need a positive spin given to me, but if you have one, I'd love to hear it right now as I go into the rest of my weekend.
I'll do my best. Now, I'm probably somewhere in the middle. I think that I'm not overly worried because, to me, it hasn't been a pattern yet. Now, the opposite side of that argument is, well, there really haven't been a lot of games where this team needed to show a ton of toughness. You know, obviously the Georgetown game was that way. The Georgia game, to a certain extent, was that way, and I thought that they did. In that scenario. So I think the positive is, for me, you can say at this point that it's a one-game thing and that it's an isolated incident. I think what concerns me is that it could not be. You're going to have other games where you have to you know, show up and play that way. And I thought, you know, they really just got out-toughed by and it's not like Butler's catching you by surprise at this point. You know, everybody knows about them. Everybody
right.
knows how they play. And that's where it's kind of like you can't say, oh, well, I got off to a slow start because I might have taken this team lightly. You can't take that team lightly. You have to know what they're going to do. You know they're going to come out and try to be physical and try to push you around. They've been really strong rebounding all year, and they've always been that way on the defensive glass, but really the last couple seasons have done a really good job on the offensive glass. So just to not seem ready for the level of intensity that you needed, I think is troubling to me, but I'm trying to keep a somewhat positive spin on it just because it's really kind of the first time I feel like that's really happened from, you know, for long stretches of time. And I think I'm definitely not one that subscribes to the, oh, it's good to have a loss theory. I think that's a lot of nonsense. So I don't really, I'm definitely not trying to spin it that way, but, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm kind of in the middle. I think it is a concern because I think there's, you know, it could become a pattern, but I'm not quite that bad because it hasn't yet, if that makes any sense.
No, it does make sense. I think you summed it up well. All right, we got a couple minutes before they cut us off, at least a live portion, just because obviously the overtime, we ran a little bit late, so we've got a limited time. So I will kick it over to you for final thoughts, Andy, and then I'll go, and let's see what we can come up with for what can only be described as a disappointing loss for Indiana.
Well, I will say that for me, the positive is that you may have lost, but I did win the battle in putting together the shopping cart for my daughter for Christmas. So I did emerge victorious from that matchup. I have yet to take on the Barbie Beach House, but we'll see how that goes. I mean, I guess as far as the, you know, as far as the game, I think it as we've said other times after losses, it's certainly a learning experience, and you want to see how these guys react. Everybody has really been pretty much all over them all season around how good they are, and they really haven't faced a ton of adversity, and I think this is the first chance where you really learn about what you have to do. And I think one of the reasons you play a team like Butler is that it is a great preparation for the Big Ten and the kind of toughness that you're going to need. So, you know, I guess to keep it brief, what I'll be looking for these next few games, and particularly as the Big Ten season starts, is can you see that you learned something from this? Because that's where the old, you know, a loss can be a good thing does make a little bit of sense if you learn from it. But if you start to see, you know, Watford not really pick it up and you start to see Cody get shoved around by people, then, you know, that loss doesn't really do a whole lot for you. So I think that's what I'm most interested to see and see how these guys bounce back. Holes look pretty despondent after the game and pretty pissed, quite honestly. So Obviously, he's a guy who's pretty hard on himself as it is, and you know, I just want to see him bounce back. The hard part is these next three games aren't really going to be a great barometer to see what the team's learned from it. So we'll kind of see how they bounce back and go from there.
Well, I mean, and here's my final thought is, no, it's not a great barometer from a talent level perspective, but I do think these next three games just became a lot more interesting. They were already going to be interesting just to see how Creed incorporates Hunter and Peter and Derek back into the lineup. But now I'm really interested on Wednesday night to see if Christian comes out and plays with a sense of urgency. And I really want to see over these next three games if Kobe comes out and dominates. He should come out against, who is this, Mississippi Valley State, Florida Atlantic, and Jacksonville and dominate. He should be putting up 20-10 minimum in all these games. And just having that kind of eye of the tiger attitude, I'm the best player in the effing country, I'm the best player on the floor, let me dominate. And at some point, you know, we gave him a pass his freshman year and just let him slide on talent. And we've given him a little bit of a pass early this season because he's put up some okay numbers, but the whole team has been functioning well as a unit and the competition hasn't been great. It is now time for Cody to kind of step up and fulfill his potential. Because he's going to have to do it in the Big Ten for this team to live up to its potential. And so now I'm more interested in these next three games because I want to see him and Christian come out and say, look, we have got to start playing better. And Cody said it in the post-game press conference. I saw tweets from the guys that were there. Everybody has to play better, including me. And I agree. And I think we can say this, you know, about Cody and kind of act frustrated. You know, we love Cody. He is a great guy. He is a great player. But at some point now, I think it's okay to have high expectations and to not – just look at the box score and say, oh, he had 18 points, he had a decent game. No, I thought this was one of the worst games I've seen Cody play. And as someone who has watched every single game he's played at Indiana and has a pretty good understanding, I think, of his potential, that was not the Cody Zeller that we know can come to play today. And he's got to, at some point, get a little bit tougher, get a little bit more assertive, and just demand the ball and demand of himself, I'm the preseason effing player of the year. Let me go out and play like it. And frankly, I want to see that in these next three games because he should have 20-10 within 30 minutes against these teams. And I think, to me, if he doesn't start doing that and if Christian kind of sleepwalks through these three games, I'm going to be really concerned heading into Big Ten season. And if they do kind of get their mind right in these games, I'm going to feel a lot better going on the road against Iowa, then playing Penn State, and then bringing Minnesota at home. Well, remember, last year we laid an egg against Minnesota at home and lost. So I know people say that our early Big Ten season, you know, schedule is easy, but I don't know. Going playing at Iowa and playing Minnesota in two out of the first three games, it doesn't seem that easy to me. So these guys need to get ready to play for those games for this team to live up to what they can be. And I still have a lot of confidence. Don't get me wrong, I have a lot of confidence in this team. But today showed me something that, hey, there are some chinks in the armor. I certainly think they can get fixed. I expect that they will. Now I want to see it, and I think that's probably the mentality that everybody has. So, hey, if nothing else, you want to take a positive, this loss to Butler and the way they lost, to me, it makes these next three games a lot more intriguing. Let's see what kind of mentality. The score, Indiana's going to win these three games. The score isn't necessarily what's important. How do they play? How do they come out? Do certain guys start filling their roles better? Do they dominate when they should? Do they make plays when they should? That's what I want to see out of these three games. And we'll see. But at the end of the day today, Indiana loses to Butler 88-86. And I know we spent a lot of time talking about Indiana, its issues, the problems that were exposed. Congratulations to Butler. Because no matter what happened, once there were about 3 or 4 minutes left in regulation, Butler deserved to win this basketball game. You know, Yogi made a big shot to send it to overtime. You know, different things happened. Butler deserved to win, and they did. And so congratulations to Brad Stevens and congratulations to a tough bunch of Butler players because they deserve to win. And they showed Indiana a lot of things that they need to improve upon. And so I think if Indiana fulfills its potential by the end of the season, we'll look back on this game as a positive. If Indiana ends up flaming out and struggling in the Big Ten season and not doing what we think they can do in the tournament, we may look back at this game as the one that exposes Indiana. You know, what that will be, time will tell. We will see. And it's up to Coach Crane and these players to take the lessons that can be learned from this game, learn them, and get better. Because obviously, even for, you know, the erstwhile number one team in America, because they won't be anymore, there are lots of improvements to be made. And hopefully they'll make them and make them soon because the schedule is going to start toughening up pretty quickly after these next three games. All right, we appreciate everybody listening. We will be back. The next IU game is Wednesday night. Yeah, next Wednesday against Mississippi Valley State. That game is a 6 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern. No, Mount St. Mary's. I keep saying Mississippi Valley State. Mount St. Mary's is who Indiana plays next. That game is on the Big Ten Network. We will be here right afterwards with another episode of the Assembly Call. We appreciate everybody who listened today. Once again, Indiana falls for the first time. They dropped to 9-1 to Butler, 88-86 in overtime. But thank you all for listening, and let's hope we have another victorious episode to bring you on Wednesday. I think we will. And hopefully the team plays much, much better than they did today. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend, and we will talk to you soon.